All right, everybody, welcome back to the Primal King podcast. Today, I am extremely grateful to have this man as my guest. This is someone who played college football at Michigan State University. He went on to be signed as an undrafted free agent by the Denver Broncos in the NFL. From there, he went on to help them win Super Bowl 50, where he actually caught the last career pass from the legendary Peyton Manning. He's played with a few different teams in the NFL over the past couple of years, but now has started his new calling, which is helping to change lives. He recently released his first book called Silver Spoon, The Imperfect Guide to Success, where he shares stories and examples of how to overcome what is holding you back. He also got a little help from massive stars in the book, such as Draymond Green, Julius Thomas, DeMarcus Ware, as well as several other highly successful entrepreneurs to make this a must-read book. I want to welcome everyone, Mr. Benny Fowler. Benny, so excited to have you on, man.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate you taking the time to have me on your podcast. How are you doing today?
Good, good. My pleasure. So I kind of want to start back because I know that with the book and some of the mindset things that you have, I kind of want to go back because I actually had heard somewhere that you grew up kind of suburban, right? Kind of like what would you say? Kind of like upper middle class-ish, kind of in there?
Yeah, I would say that. Upper middle class is right outside of Detroit. My mom lived in Southfield, Michigan for a while, and then my dad lived in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. So pretty nice areas.
Okay, perfect. So obviously you went on to have a lot of success and we'll kind of dive into it as well, but the adversity of not being drafted and then kind of working your way in and getting position, obviously that takes a certain mindset. But was that something that you had? Like, do you attribute that mindset, that perseverance to kind of the way that you grew up, or was it more like learned skills as you got older, or I guess where did that kind of that tenacity or that toughness start?
I would say both. I would say it comes from my parents, my mom and my dad, definitely, you know, because they raised me and they taught me about, you know, mindset and being mentally tough. And then as I grew up and, you know, you find people that you look up to, and Kobe Bryant was my favorite athlete growing up, and, you know, God rest his soul, you know, that's somebody that I looked up to and somebody that I really appreciated and somebody that I mentioned in the book. And to see his mindset develop and to see how he worked and went about his business, I really didn't understand that probably till I got to college. And that's when I started to, you know, try to craft myself and my mindset after him and what he did and what he was doing. And that's something I still do to this day. Because I'm still playing, I'm going into my seventh year in the NFL, and mindset is something that, you know, that's where everything starts. Everything starts in your mind. If you want to achieve anything, it's always going to start in your mind.
So how was it like going to school or like high school? It sounds like you had a lot of accolades and stuff in high school, right?
Mm-hmm. I had some pretty good accolades in high school.
Okay. So would you say that some of that was built? Because I know that you look back at a lot of kind of famous stars. I mean, Kobe Bryant, like you had just mentioned, you know, obviously it's kind of been wall-to-wall coverage of him. But I actually saw where he was talking about when he was 12 years old, he played all summer long in a summer basketball league and didn't score a single point. And it was like that really just like he knew he had to put in the work and the drive to be able to get to where he wanted. I mean, I don't know that anybody could have predicted where he got to. But I mean, did you face anything like that maybe at a young age to where it was like, okay, you know, because even for me, like in high school, I remember wanting to start varsity as a freshman. I went to a super small school and it was like, I almost felt like you had to do that if you wanted to be successful in sports. And I didn't at first. And I remember that just like really, I don't know, it just really drove me. Like, did you have any of those moments in high school, or did it all, like, especially like athletics, did it all come pretty natural or?
Yeah, it all came pretty naturally. You know, I played football and basketball, and I ran track all at a young age. And then I stopped playing football early on, and I just, you know, continued to do basketball and track. And then I picked football back up my junior year in high school. So sports-wise, things came pretty easy to me. I was able to get back out on the football field and earn some scholarships to get to Michigan State. But I would say if I had a moment like that, it would probably have been my freshman year spring practice at Michigan State was like when I like had my moment where, like, you know how you said Kobe, you know, didn't score any points. I really struggled that spring as a receiver to get open and understand coverages and understand the playbook. And it was just, you know, very shocking to me as an athlete and as a person. So that's what I had to hone in, and I had to really grind that summer in order to get on the field for my redshirt freshman year because I redshirted.
Wow. So that's where you kind of learn that talent and skill can get you a long ways in high school, but then you get to the college level and everybody has talent and skill, right?
Yeah. Everybody was just as fast or bigger than me. So yeah, getting up there in the summer, there's no pads on. So, you might catch a couple passes in 7-on-7. There's no pads. And then I redshirted my entire freshman year because I had a small stress fracture in my foot. And then going into spring, I hadn't really played any football in about 6-7 months, and getting out there and doing winter conditioning, that was a humbling experience, just waking up super early and doing all that conditioning. And then going into spring ball, that's when I really got humbled. And I was like, oh, you're going to really have to learn this game and understand the ins and outs in order to be good.
Yeah, I bet. Was there anybody that, maybe a coach or a mentor, or maybe I know you talked about your dad, but was there anybody that maybe was an inspiration to you growing up, or someone that kind of put their arm around you? Is like, you can do this. Because I have a son who's right now, he's 6 years old, and his dream is to play in the NFL. And we're actually fortunate. So we live in a super small town. It's a long story. People that listen to the podcast know it. But the town that we moved back to where I grew up actually has a player in the NFL right now, Leighton Vanderish. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yeah.
So he's actually from my hometown. And so we actually watched the Super Bowl with him here a couple days ago and was hanging out. And so it's like my son gets to see that even from a small town like that can happen. And so he kind of has that, I don't know, maybe the role model or at least the belief, right? Did you have somebody like that, maybe somebody you knew who had made it, or somebody who's like, you can do it? Did you have anybody like that growing up?
My dad had brought, people around. We had, gone to Pistons games and Lions games and watched football. I didn't necessarily want to be a football and NFL player. I wanted to be a professional athlete, mostly a professional basketball player. I remember Mikey Moore, he played for the Detroit Pistons, and he came to one of our games when we were 8 years old. I remember staying after games and Pistons games and trying to get headbands from Ben Wallace, who I end up being really good friends with starting in high school, and now we're still really good friends, who play for the Detroit Pistons. So I would probably say in high school, being around the Pistons, because my best friend, Jordan Dumars, was his dad was the president and GM of the Detroit Pistons. So I got a chance to see Rasheed, Ben, Chauncey, Rip, all those guys up close and how they lived on and off the court as a high school kid. So when I just got to watch and see those guys practice every day and this is what their life was like, that's what I wanted to be. So I think subconsciously in my mind, that's where I knew I wanted to be, and this is how I wanted my life to go. I didn't know how it was going to go because I was playing football, but being around those guys and seeing how those guys work and how they embraced us and came to some of our high school games, even though, because they were playing for the Pistons at the time and because of Joe Dumars, but just having those guys come to our games, it was really cool.
That's awesome. So at least it kind of humanizes it, right? These are real people. Because I know even for me growing up, because it actually was one of my dreams to make it to the NFL. And, I'm slow and that didn't happen. But, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody who had ever, I knew some guys who had played a little, maybe some college and stuff like that. But it seems like maybe it makes it a little bit more real when you can kind of see that, hey, they're just real people, just like me. They're just really, really talented at something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The fact that they would joke with us, take us out to dinner. We got to go to the Christmas party with the Pistons. And they made it seem they were just normal people. And the fact that they would text us and say little things here and there, it was all right, I know we can do this.
Yeah, that's great. That's great stuff. So then when you, because again, kind of doing some of the research for the podcast and everything else, you were expecting to get drafted, right? I mean, that going into the draft, coming out of college, you thought you would be drafted, right?
Yeah, just based off of, Michigan State, my school name recognition, and as well as we played that season, we went 13-1, and I was the leading receiver on that team. We just had a lot of national recognition, and I definitely thought I would get drafted, especially getting invited to the combine.
Yep. And so what was that like? I mean, I assume you're probably sitting there like most of the guys do, watching the draft, probably waiting for the phone call, and it doesn't come. Like, what was the day after the draft like for you?
Well, the day after the draft, I was already on a plane to Denver because after the draft, all the undrafted free agents or priority free agents, they call them. They get calls right after the draft is over and teams are trying to get you to come in and come to their camp and their mini camp. And they want to, you know, see if you can make their team. So I chose to go to Denver. The Detroit Lions offered me the most money because that was in my backyard. That usually happens to some people, but I chose to go to Denver because if I could play with Peyton Manning, learn his offense and gain his trust, because he doesn't throw the ball just to anybody, I knew I could play anywhere in the NFL. And so I chose to go to Denver.
So what was that like? You walk in, you know, you get signed to Denver. You walk into arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Obviously, he's kind of, you know, on the backstretch of his career. But, you know, mentally, I know he was still there. Obviously, you guys ended up winning a Super Bowl together. But, like, what was it like working with someone like him who truly is one of the best of the best? Did he just see things different? Did he have a different mindset than anybody else you had seen? Or, like, what did you – maybe learn from Peyton?
Yeah, I had never seen anything like that. I'll never forget the first day I walked in there and we're picking out our numbers, and I choose number 16 because I wore 13 in college and in high school. And my locker was two down from his two lockers. My man had two lockers. That's how good he was. So yeah, wow. Two lockers. And I'll never forget him coming in there and just introducing himself, this 16-year NFL vet coming up to me, and not just me, but all the rest of the rookies, and just treating us like normal people. And that's what So I saw his leadership from a different perspective, and him knowing everybody in the building by their first name. Because in order to achieve success in the NFL and anywhere else in life, you're going to need the help of other people. So the way he treated everybody was something I really learned from him, but also his preparation and the way he went about things and the way he went about film and understanding coverages, understanding defensive coordinators. He didn't study teams. He would study coordinators and how the coordinators played him. So he just had a unique perspective. I've never seen anything like it. I had a chance to play with Tom Brady for a week, and, you know, that's kind of similar, but they have, you know, Belichick and Josh McDaniels. And then I got a chance to play with Eli. Eli prepares the same way. All three of those quarterbacks prepare unlike anybody I've ever seen.
So having the chance, I mean, this is I don't know, man, like schoolboy stuff, right? I'm like sitting here like, you got a chance to play with Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, but also with Tom Brady, like, wow. I mean, do you ever look back and just – is this real life?
Not yet, because my career is not done. So I want to play four more years. I want to play 10 years. That's my goal. But sometimes when I – you know, when people ask me and, you know, I can go back and just think about those memories, all three of those quarterbacks do – they all do something very similar. They all come up to you and introduce themselves to you. And they almost give you like a little background on yourself. Like Tom Brady's like, yeah, I know you from, you went to Michigan State. Look forward to playing with you. And Eli's like, yeah, I talked to Peyton about you. You know, looking forward to working with you. So they really care about everybody on the team, and they want an understanding. They like to have an understanding of who they're throwing to, and who they're playing with, because they know they need the help of everybody. Like they can't do this by themselves.
So you want to talk about leadership, right? Because how often is it, even in like the world that we live in now with kind of like influencers and everything else, to where it's all about who you are? And then you're talking about some of the biggest names literally in the history of the NFL who knew about you, right? And I mean, it just seems to go to their leadership ability when they, because I assume when you walk in there and someone like that is talking to you, it has to be like, man, I'm buying in. I'm running my head through a wall for this guy. Like, he took the time to figure out who I am. Like, it's got to be pretty humbling, right?
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. I saw John Maxwell, who has wrote a bunch of different books, like 70 different books. He says that influencers are leaders. Like, leadership is the ability to influence people. So those guys, and that's what I talk about in, you know, some of the speeches that I do. They influence me. And like you said, I wanted to run through a wall. Whatever Peyton asked me to do, it didn't matter what it was. Just because of the fact the way he came up to me. Like, I couldn't imagine him walking past me in that locker room and not saying anything to me, and how that would have made me feel, because he didn't do that. He came up to me, introduced himself, and right then and there, I was like, oh yeah, whatever he needs, I'm going to try to do.
That's great. So not asking to name any names, but did you ever play maybe with players, and not necessarily quarterbacks, but I imagine you probably witnessed kind of the other side of that as well, right? Like people who didn't have the leadership ability, maybe they're just there to play. They didn't really have the mindset to have the prolonged success. Did you kind of get to see the other side of that as well? Kind of maybe the lack of leadership in certain locker rooms?
No, I wouldn't say necessarily the lack of leadership, but you know, some of the older guys, they might just want to see your action on the field first.
Yeah.
And then they, all right, he's serious. Because, you know, the people who have been in the locker room the longest, they see people who just want to be in the NFL because of the lifestyle. So they don't necessarily gravitate. They like to see your work first, which I totally understand. That's just, you know, how people work. And they'd rather see you work first. And then, you know, they'll pull you aside and point some things out here and there. But they'd rather see you work first, which I totally understand as well.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. I mean, I get that there's a lot of guys that come and go in the NFL, and I'm sure that there's part of it to where when you've been a vet for a while, it's like kind of, you know, show me what you got, not just tell me, right?
You gotta earn your keep. Yeah.
So having been in the NFL now for as long as you have, and I know you said you still want 4 more years, what do you feel like maybe is the biggest takeaway that you've learned, whether that be around mindset or success? Or maybe something that would translate to, obviously all the people listening to this aren't in the NFL, but maybe something that you've learned that would translate to help out kind of your everyday person that's out there running a business, you know, building their lives.
Yeah. So like the NFL is a business. That's what people, when I speak and I want people to understand that, yes, I play in the NFL, but the NFL is one of the biggest businesses in the world. So the thing that I would take away the most from my career so far is that communication is everything. From the top down, we all have to be on the same page. We all have to be going in the same direction, because a couple people straying off, you can't win a championship like that. Everybody has to understand what the goal is. We got to break those goals down. And it starts with communication. It starts from the top down. The best teams that I've been on have had flawless communication from the top down. And, you know, we're only with the teams that I've been on, you're only as good as your weakest link. So whatever your weakest link is, if he's good, then you're going to be a good team. So communication is key. Nurturing people, understanding, communicating and understanding, because everybody is different. We all come from different backgrounds, different walks of life. So those coaches that I've had who can communicate the best to all the players, are the best teams that I've been on. So I would say communication is definitely one of the biggest things that I've taken from being in the NFL, just because, you know, like I said, people need people in order to be successful.
Wow, that's great. That's great. So now you're transitioning into best-selling author.
Yeah.
What compelled you to, you know, because the NFL and athletes in general kind of get a stigma, like a bunch of meatheads beating their head together all the time, right? But obviously you're not like that. You're a very thoughtful guy from everything that I've been able to read about you. You know, what compelled you, I guess, to maybe go outside of kind of the NFL and the athlete stereotype, if you will, and actually write a book that is meant to inspire so many people?
Well, I got cut from Chicago and I was at home for about 3 or 4 weeks. So it's like, all right, what are you going to do? I still want to be around people and inspire people. And I love to talk and just be around people. So I wanted to write a book and inspire people. And I saw Kobe Bryant when he was kind of transitioning. He wrote some books. Now his books necessarily, there were, you know, stories. And, you know, my book has some stories in it, but I want to inspire people. And this can get me in the door anywhere, because I don't want people just to think that I am an athlete. So to get rid of that stigma, you know, I wrote a book and I want people to understand this is how I talk. This is how I portray myself. And I want, you know, just to inspire the world, just because I won't be able to play football forever. And this is like a legacy thing. This book, no one can take this book from me. And this book is mine. And it's going to be out there forever for people to buy. And it can inspire just so many people. Like, it's a self-actualizing book. This is not like a self-help book. All the principles in this book are things that people already have within themselves. And through these stories and some of the stories from myself and my friends and my family, you'll get inspired. Even if you're already well off, you'll get inspired from it.
So when you were writing it, you know, you brought in some huge names. Was the idea behind that just to get different experiences? Was it to validate maybe some of the things that you already thought when it comes to like success and mindset and all of that? Like, what was kind of the thought process with bringing in people outside of maybe you just writing a book, just all you?
Well, I wanted other people to see that. That's why I call it the Imperfect Guide to Success, Silver Spoon, the Imperfect Guide to Success, because there are so many different ways to go about achieving success. We all have the same 24 hours, but I want people to realize that you don't have to follow my path, Draymond's path, Julius Thomas's path. You have to follow your own path, but you're going to have to put in the work. You're going to have to be disciplined. You're going to have to set goals. You're going to have to handle adversity. You're going to have to handle success. So I brought in those big names because those are people who I love, people who I've learned from a lot, and people who I spend a lot of time with. So these are really good friends of mine. I mean, Draymond and Julius are going to be groomsmen in my wedding. So these are people, you know, these aren't just, you know, guys I played with in college or knew. No, I know these guys. These are best friends of mine. So I wanted people like I admire a lot. So I wanted them to be a part of my book.
That's really cool that you were able to incorporate everybody into that. So what is, you know, because within the, you know, I know that you said that this is more self-actualization as opposed to self-help, but it seems like so many people out there kind of in the self-help space, if you want to call it that, they have different things. You know, sometimes it's a morning rituals or routines or diets or things like that. Like, what's maybe one thing that you feel like on a day-to-day basis, like, do you have any daily routines that every morning you wake up at this time and you go, like, do you have anything like that that could maybe, if there are people listening that are in a funk or something like that, that could kind of get them into a routine of some sort to start pulling themselves out of it?
Yeah. So, you know, I went to Pete Vargas's conference. He teaches you how to, you know, win stages and create a business. And he says, you have to win the days. And when you win the days, you'll win the weeks. You win the weeks, you win the month. You win the months, you'll win the year. And you constantly land that foundation. So I would say to people, success happens in a day. Success happens every day. Success doesn't happen in a day. It happens every day. Success doesn't happen in a day. It happens every day. So the thing I would tell people, if you're in a little bit of a rut or a funk or whatever it may be, just to-do list, write a to-do list of things that you're trying to accomplish just the next day. So I want people to understand, success, that's an everyday thing. You got to win every single day. And the more days you win, the better weeks you'll have, the better months you'll have. So, you know, it's just, you got to win every single day. But if you do a to-do list and if you check those things off every single day, like today I had your podcast on there. I had something I wanted to do for a YouTube channel. I want to wash some clothes, you know, just wrote those on and just check those things off. And as those things get done, you know I accomplished some things today.
So basically by kind of setting everything up in a day by day period, like by the end of the day, you can cross everything off and look back and be like, okay, I got something done. Cause sometimes it is easy, right? Like if you're running a business or if you're, even if you're working a job and everything, you know, you have kids or you have, you know, a spouse and everything, it all just gets jumbled up. So at least, I guess, if you have some sort of a list every day, you can look back and be like, okay, I did do something today. I didn't just run around with my hair on fire all day, right? Like, it at least gives you a sense of accomplishment that you had a list of stuff that you got done, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we do in the NFL. Like on Wednesdays, that's like our Monday. So we take care of our Wednesday things. That's like our first and second down. Thursdays, we take care of third down and a little bit of red zone. Friday, we bring it all together. We have a perfect Friday. Saturday, we walk through it all. And then Sunday, we try to go out there and achieve our goal of winning. So, you know, we try to just win each day, and we don't always win the games. You know, I've been on some good teams and bad teams, but just because we're not winning, we don't just automatically change the foundation of how we practice and how we go about things. We have things we have to get done every single day.
No, makes sense. Do you think that's maybe why some people do have a hard time transitioning out of the league, because everything is so structured and because it's like a, you know, very, very structured regimen as far as the days, the practices, the games, the, you know, the training and everything else? Because it seems like a lot of players do kind of struggle to transition out, and you always hear about the people losing money and everything else. Do you think that a lot of times once guys retire, because I mean, let's face it, when you retire from the NFL, for most other professions, you would literally just be getting started, right? Like, you know, most guys are out of the league, you know, mid-20s, late 20s, and that's kind of like when most of, like, the normal people out there are finally finding their stride or getting into a career. So Do you feel like maybe after all of that structure that you go through from college, you know, a lot of it's, you know, all the way back to like Pee Wee, but, you know, high school and then college and then the NFL and it's all structured. And then all of a sudden one day it's like, I don't play football. What do I do? What, like, what am I going to do when I wake up tomorrow? Like, do you see that happening sometimes? And do you think that's attributed to some of the structure?
Yeah. Cause just because the NFL can come, it could take, you know, it could, you could just be done playing whenever. So you have to find that balance. And I feel like if you find that balance in the off season, like we have so much time in the off season. Starting last year, this is where like I started to, you know, figure out like, all right, what would I want to do if I'm not playing anymore? So obviously I would still want to work out, but people have to find their interests and their talents and their passion and what they're really passionate about, because then they can make the transition easy. Like, and if people, you just have to have some self-awareness and understand, like Kobe Bryant understood towards the end of his career, like, all right, I'm not about to play forever. So you could see him start writing books, making investments, getting involved in businesses so the transition would be easier. So, you know, that's what I'm kind of doing. I'm understanding, because I don't want to play for 15 years. I want to play 10 years, and I'm at 6 right now and just taking it one day at a time. But, you know, if the NFL was like, hey, you know, you're done next year, I'm going to go right into my speaking business and understand all of that. So, you know, just – that's what I would tell players. You got to find out what you're passionate about and start digging into it in the off season, just because you can't work out 18 times a day. So, you know, you got to find something else to do.
Yeah. Do you feel like maybe this book would be helpful for a lot of those guys who are kind of maybe getting toward the end of their career and looking to figure out maybe what direction to go?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this book can help a lot of different people, just because, you know, Julius Thomas is in the book and he retired after year 7, and you know, now he's back in school and he's getting his psychology degree. And my friend Darquez, who's also in the book, you know, he went back and got his master's degree while he was playing in the NFL. These are people that, you know, Draymond's in a whole bunch of different ventures right now that, you know, if basketball got taken from him, he is going to be just fine, you know, and he's going to find his own lane. So
if you don't chill out on them technicals, man, he might be there sooner rather than later. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. No, that's great. So with Draymond, though, have you known him since high school?
Yeah, we played on the same AAU team in high school. So I would say I think I met Draymond my sophomore year. So when I was 15, I met him. He was a junior.
Wow. Yeah. So that's cool, because, you know, again, like growing up in a smaller town like I did, obviously I got out for a while, did some other things, and then came back. But you just didn't really know anybody who made professional athlete, you know, made it as a professional athlete. And it's like, you got all these people kind of around you that you got the opportunity to play with. Looking back at that experience now and having some of the relationships, like, do you feel like that was something that maybe kind of propelled you to just keep going? Like, is there any type of, like, I don't know if you'd say a competition, but is it ever like, I see Draymond over there, like winning titles and being part of this dynasty in Golden State. Like, it's like, man, if he can do that, like I should, you know, keep going. Like, I got it in me to keep going and keep playing in the NFL and do the best I can in there.
Absolutely. We had a group chat that was that has been very successful. I think a lot of us all have rings. Jordan Dumars is the one who started the group chat. So it's Jordan Dumars, myself, Draymond, Brandon Graham for the Philadelphia Eagles, who has a Super Bowl ring. Draymond has 3 rings. Frank Clark just won his ring with Kansas City. Jonas Gray, who won a ring with the New England Patriots. And myself. So, yeah, that competition was definitely around. Draymond is obviously the most successful one out of all of us in terms of the rings. But the fact that we all have rings out of that entire group of people, we also had Jared Sullinger in that group, who played in the NBA for a little bit, and Roy Roundtree and Morrell Evans. Morrell Evans is in the tech world and in the IBM world out in San Francisco. So everybody's successful in their own way, but we all definitely compete. And hold each other accountable, you know, just sending workout videos in our group chat. We don't necessarily do that group chat anymore because everybody, you know, not everybody, but a lot of those guys have kids now. And, you know, so it's not everybody doesn't have time to be on their phones. But when that group chat was really going, I mean, it was a lot of competition in terms of, you know, who's working the hardest and who's going out there and actually putting in that work and not just talking the talk, but walking the walk.
Yeah, and I guess, and that was kind of why I was asking, because one of the things that I've learned the most around being, you know, a part of like the last company that I was with and watching the growth and, you know, now it's probably going to end up being a $1 billion software company. And one of the biggest things that I learned at my time there was, you know, surrounding yourself with people who will push you. And like you said, also hold you accountable, right? Because it's so easy to get stuck in the day-to-day just kind of life and being stuck around people that are complaining about everything. And before you know it, it's like you're complaining, you know, you just kind of fall into the group or the people that you're around. And so, I mean, it seems like that has been such an enormous like influence, probably not just for you, but even for Draymond, even though he's had, you know, a ton of success, but just that accountability, right? Just being in a circle of people that are all kind of pushing to be better and pushing to accomplish more. I mean, I guess if you wouldn't mind, like how important do you think it is to have the right circle and be surrounded by the right people that will push you and hold you accountable?
I think it's everything. And I think that, you know, as I get older, you know, some friendships just don't last because of accountability that I'm trying to hold them accountable, or they're trying to hold, or they're not holding me accountable. And I feel like that's everything. And that's what leaders seek. Leaders seek accountability because they don't want a bunch of people just telling them, yes, yes, that's right, that's right. They need people to be like, I don't know if that's right. I think you should go in a different direction. And I don't just do that with my friends. I also do that with my family. You know, my brother is somebody who holds me accountable all the time and tells me, hey, you got to take a step back, or hey, you need to do this. So I feel like that if you want to be successful, you surround yourself with other successful people and people who want to be just as successful or more successful than you. So I think that's very key for people to understand, is that you have to surround yourself with the right people. And if you cut those ties with relationships because you don't feel like they're going in the same direction as you, in the long run, you won't regret that. You'll understand that you had to make that sacrifice in this friendship to achieve something that you wanted to achieve.
Have you had to do that?
Oh, yeah. You do it all. I do it all the time. Just everything just kind of fades away. Everything kind of just handles itself because you'll end up being more busy and you won't have time for the things you had time for.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I've seen the same thing. It's crazy, right? Like once you have a dream or a vision or a goal and you're working toward it, as long as you stay focused on it, it's amazing. It seems like how everything else kind of weeds itself out along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens naturally.
Yep. Yep. So what would be, because obviously everybody who's listening, I mean, I think they should go and get your book. They should read it. Obviously you've had a lot of kind of just different influences and things that have pushed you to where you are right now, even though you're still a young guy, but a lot of different influences and everything else. But if someone were to read the book, what is maybe one thing that after they read it, that they walk away with as far as maybe a takeaway or something that you feel like was a huge value that they could walk away from after reading the book?
Just discipline. You know, discipline is the biggest form of self-love. So, you know, if you're going to have a diet and you follow it, that you show that you really care about yourself for getting up early and trying to get things done. I'll never forget, you know, Kobe Bryant saying the reason why he gets up at 4:30 in the morning is because it gets him and sets him apart, because he's able to work out three times that day. And by the end of the summer, he's 2 or 3 years ahead of somebody else. So that discipline is super important. And I want people to understand that everything in this book is not something I made up. You know, this is a blend of different things that I've taken from different people. So what I want people to take from is that you got all, like I said, you have all these capabilities inside of you. You can do it. And just, you know, it's just going to take some time. You know, success doesn't happen overnight. It's something that you have to go through and happens every single day. And you just take it one day at a time. Sometimes people just want to achieve their goals so fast, and life just doesn't work like that. You have to work and it'll come. Like, it took me 22 years to get to the NFL. Like, it didn't happen overnight. It took me my whole life.
Wow. Wow. Do you have anything, because I know that, I mean, discipline is something that I struggle with still, right? Like I try to make myself do stuff I don't want to do just so I can stay disciplined to it. Like, one of the things I started doing lately, and everybody out there probably thinks I'm crazy, but I started doing cold showers because I heard that there's some health benefits to it. And I was like, I hate, like, warm shower to me is like the best thing ever. And so I'm like, I'm going to start, like, at the end, I'm going to sit in like a freezing cold shower for a minute because I hate it, but I'm going to make sure that I'm disciplined enough to do it. And it's crazy, like, how much stuff changes when you start embracing things that maybe kind of suck, right? Like, the willpower, you know, just kind of understanding the strength that it takes to get through it. And again, like, I know there's a lot of people like, why the hell would you sit in a cold shower, right? but again, like I know there's some benefits to it, but also kind of the discipline side of it. Is there something that you do? I mean, is it making yourself do something that you would say kind of sucks every day just to prove that you can stay disciplined? Or is there any other tips or tricks or hacks maybe that you have that you could share with everybody out there?
I try to do things with my diet or working out. It just really just depends on what I'm feeling, you know, going vegan sometimes, no meat, no dairy products for at least a couple weeks, maybe a month, maybe a juice cleanse, maybe if it's just 2 days, you know, just a couple different things that I do just to try to stay disciplined. But I'm out of bed, make sure I'm out of bed before 7:15 every morning, up and downstairs, up and moving, like not in the bed. I don't like sleeping in, sleeping in at all, just because, you know, I feel like I'm wasting some time. So, and time is one of the only things in the world that you can't get back. So, you know, just a couple of different things but, you know, I would say just don't try to make it like a year thing. Just take it like 1 week. Like when I got into being a vegan, I just did it for 1 week and then I saw how good I felt and then I kept it going. So maybe a juice cleanse for a day, no hard food for a day. So just, I do a couple of different things.
Gotcha. So are you still vegan? Like, do you do it like permanently now, or is it something that you just kind of do every once in a while? Or
no, it's something I do every once in a while. But I follow a pretty good diet plan. I eat at a place called Fit Foods, has the meals already ready, and all you have to do is heat them up and eat them.
Nice. So I want to kind of start wrapping things up here. I know I appreciate you spending as much time as you have. So just a couple more questions. So, first of all, because kind of the three pillars of the Primal King podcast and the reason why I put it together, it comes down to liberation, lifestyle, and legacy, right? Like those are the three things that I really feel like a lot of people struggle with, mindset things, and kind of liberation is the first way to get outside of that. And then going into lifestyle. So with you, with the lifestyle that you have now, like, do you enjoy the lifestyle? Like the, you know, outside of obviously the glamour and the glitz and the lights of the NFL, like, what is the lifestyle like for someone who's playing in the NFL?
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work. And you learn a lot about process. So I love being in the NFL because you get to see how a team gets formed and are we going to be successful that year. But you like watch it from the spring all the way through the summer to the fall. And then once we go out there for opening day, it's like, all right, wow, like these are the 53 guys that are going to try to win this championship. So you know, I love the lifestyle because it, you know, a year in the NFL is like 10 years of life just because of the process and everything you go through. It's just like, it's just such a grind. And then people are in and out, injuries happen, you know, people get fired. You have to navigate through so many things in just 6 months, really. So it's very unique. It's a lot of ups and downs and it teaches you so much about life and how to handle adversity. And how to just keep pushing. You have to keep pushing because the NFL is not going to wait for you. These coaches and these owners are not going to just wait for you to, you know, just kind of like, all right, we'll let him just coast along. It doesn't work like that. Like they'll bring somebody else in. They work out people every single Tuesday to take your job. So.
Wow. Okay. So when you talk about kind of looking around the 53 guys, like be honest, you've been in the NFL for a while. You ever look around and you're like, this 53 isn't going to cut it, man. We're like, we're not going anywhere.
No, I've never looked at it like that just because you get to see these guys every single day. And some of these guys are the most talented people that, you know, I've ever seen. Like when I was on the New York Giants last year, just like Sterling Shepard, Odell Beckham, Saquon Barkley, Eli Manning, you know, the things just didn't go the right way for that team. Yeah. But I can't say like, oh yeah, this team isn't talented. No, that team was really talented. You know, just it really shows how talented the NFL is and how much you have to gel as a team. But no, I've never gone into a season like that.
Do you think that because the Giants are a great example, right? With all the talent that they had, do you think enough players really understand like how important continuity is? I mean, obviously you do. And like, I can tell that you think a lot about the process, which is really, I think, why it's so interesting to talk to you about this. Right. But like, when you look around, do you feel like a lot of guys, and I'm not asking you to throw anybody under the bus, but I mean, we know how it is to be young. You come to the NFL or, I mean, any company, right? Like when you're young, a lot of times you're not kind of looking around you. Like, do you feel like people that you've played around, like, do you think a lot of them kind of understand how important it is to, for the team to gel, or is everyone, because the NFL is such a tough business, just being like, man, I got to perform. Like, I got to worry about me. I've got to stay in the NFL. I've got to feed my family. Like, do you see kind of that dynamic at all?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. It really just depends on what situation you came into. So I can't necessarily speak for those guys because I don't know what they're necessarily thinking, but I know that I was super fortunate enough to come to the Denver Broncos, who had just lost in the Super Bowl, but we had so much veteran presence and talent. Yeah, like got Aqib Talib, T.J. Ward, Jamarcus Ware, Von Miller, Demaryius Thomas, Wes Welker, Emmanuel Sanders, Peyton, Julius Thomas, Ryan Clady. I mean, we had 13 Pro Bowlers on my rookie year team. So those are the guys I was learning from. So you understand continuity and how important that is because of the team that I came on into. So they made it super important. They made us understand as rookies, like, we're only going to be good if you guys are good. So, you know, and they all held us accountable. So I walked into a very unique situation, and that's why I carry that with me, because I want people to understand, like, yeah, we had 13 Pro Bowls on that team, but we didn't win a championship with that team. We won it the next year. But we lost in the first round that year. But the continuity and understanding all of that, that team right there made me understand that, oh, yeah, you just can't walk in here and win a championship. 13 Pro Bowlers, and we lost in the first round at home.
Yeah, I remember that. That was kind of a shocker. Yeah. So now that you're an old guy, right? Like, you're an old guy in NFL standards. Do you walk into a locker room, like, you know, obviously sounds like you're probably going to get signed again, right? Do you walk in there and be like, all right, young guys, like, let me tell you a little bit about how this life works?
No, I just try to show them through my work. Yep. And then if they want to ask questions about where I've been and why I go about things a certain way, then I'll tell them, you know, I had a kind of situation with that, like that this year. Daniel Jones and I got really close. Darius Slayton, we became really good friends and teammates just because of, you know, some of the stories and experiences I could share with them. And so they could understand, like, I mean, those two guys are really super talented. And, you know, I like to share, you know, I feel like I got their respect the way I go about my work. And that, you know, I'm not a veteran who's, you know, worried about a young guy coming and take my spot. No, if you're talented, you're talented. You'll find a way on the field.
Yep, yep. All right, so I've got one question left for you. But before we do that, where can people find the book? Where's the Amazon, right?
Everybody can find it on Amazon or Kindle. Hardcovers will be available this next week. But everybody can find it on Amazon and Kindle.
Okay, perfect. So by the time you all are listening to this podcast, you will be able to find the hardback. And again, the name of the book, just so everybody knows, is Silver Spoon, The Imperfect Guide to Success. Make sure you go out there and pick it up. And then also for people that just want to follow you, keep an eye on where you're at, where you're playing next year, all of that. Best ways to hook up with you on social, maybe.
Yeah, Instagram. They can reach out to me on Instagram via direct message or Twitter. I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm also dropping articles from my book on LinkedIn on, you know, how to achieve success, goal setting, and all different type of things. So they could just reach out to me on there.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, before I ask the final question, thanks, man. It's been awesome. Been awesome talking with you. Like I mentioned, I always covered the three pillars, you know, between liberation, lifestyle, and legacy. So you're still young right now, right? Mm-hmm. But one of the main questions that I have for you is that when that day comes, what do you want the legacy of Benny Fowler to be?
Just that I was a great guy to be around, that I was a great friend. I always had a positive outlook on life, and that I was just a good person, and they loved being around me.
Perfect. What else could you say that would be better, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's all I really care about is, you know, people enjoyed their time around me. I made people smile, made people laugh, and, you know, they don't have anything negative to say about me.
That's great. That's great. Awesome. Well, again, I appreciate you so much for hopping on. I hope you guys all enjoyed this episode. Again, go out there, get the book, find Benny on social media, make sure you hit him up. We'll talk to you guys all next week.